order. Ms. Cheryl, please call the roll.
Chair League, excused. Vice Chair McClure?
Here.
Committee Whip Mooney?
Here.
Ranking Member Driscoll? Representatives Altman? Representative Altman? Andrade?
Here.
Bell?
Here.
Benjamin? Benjamin? Brannon?
Here.
Rosado Cabrera? Cheney?
Here.
Daley?
Here.
Fine? Garrison?
Here.
Gottlieb? Grant? Gregory?
Here.
Hunchowski?
Here.
Masullo? Payne?
Here.
Perez? Rummel?
Here.
Sosman?
Here.
Schoaf? Silvers? Skidmore?
Here.
Stevenson?
Here.
Tomco? Williams, excused. You have a quorum, Mr. Chair.
Quorum being present, I want to welcome everyone to the Appropriations Committee. Members and folks in the audience, please be sure to silence your cell phones and other communication devices. All right, members, we have three bills on our agenda today. Representative Schoaf, you ready to go on House Bill 1C, Disaster Relief? You're recognized to introduce it.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Hurricane Idalia made landfall on August 30th along the Florida's Big Bend coast at Keaton Beach as a Category 3. With maximum wind speeds of 125 miles an hour, the system remained a hurricane as it impacted a large swath of North Florida before crossing up into Georgia. Idalia was only the third major hurricane on record to make landfall in the Big Bend region, and it was the strongest to make landfall since the Cedar Key hurricane in 1896. Preliminary issued losses for Florida are estimated to be at $9.6 billion. The storm had a significant impact on the agricultural production in the region. More than 3.3 million acres of Florida's agricultural lands were affected, including damage to agriculture-related infrastructure that will need to be repaired or replaced post-storm. Post-storm cleanup and expenses and production losses that may carry over into 2024 and beyond. Among the commodities most impacted by Hurricane Idalia include animal and animal products, field and row crops, nurseries, timber, forest, and aquaculture. This bill provides a number of tax relief provisions for agriculture producers affected by the storm. Specifically, the bill will allow certain farm-related tangible property, personal property, to be assessed at no greater than the property's salvage value if, due to the hurricane, the property was unusable for 60 days. It creates a refund for fuel taxes paid for agricultural shipments and debris removal from agricultural properties in counties affected by the hurricane. And it provides sales tax exemptions for certain fencing and building materials used to replace or repair non-residential farm buildings damaged by the hurricane. The bill also appropriates funds to assist those communities most impacted by natural disasters in our state. It specifies that the legislature intends to provide the entire match requirement for FEMA public assistance to local governments within counties designated in the FEMA disaster declaration. It appropriates $30 million from general revenue to the Division of Emergency Management to the fund to match. It appropriates $25 million from the Local Government Housing Trust Fund to Florida Housing Finance Corporation to fund the Hurricane Housing Recovery Program for eligible counties and municipalities based upon population and FEMA damage assessment. It appropriates $50 million to the General Revenue Fund for DEM for the Hurricane Recovery Grant Program for local governments, again, within the counties designated in the FEMA disaster. The funding may be used for repair and recovery projects, including unanticipated expenses or revenue losses. And keep in mind, members, these counties, the majority of them are fiscally constrained and cannot tax their way out of this. It appropriates $10 million for the State Transportation Trust Fund to the Department of Transportation for the Small County Outreach Program, specifically for transportation projects within the counties designated in the disaster area. It appropriates $3 million from the General Revenue Fund to DEM to provide planning and design grants for new EOCs in the fiscally constrained counties. It appropriates $5 million from the General Revenue Fund to the Department of Commerce to award rural infrastructure funds to the fiscally constrained counties. It appropriates $181.5 million from General Revenue Fund to the Department of Financial Services for mitigation grants and administrative costs associated with the My Safe Florida Home program. It creates the Agriculture and Aquaculture Producers Natural Disaster Recovery Loan Program within the Department of Agriculture to provide loans to producers that have experienced damage or destruction from a declared natural disaster, and transfers $75 million from the General Revenue Fund to DACS to fund this program. Loan funds may be used to restore, repair, or replace essential physical property or remove vegetative debris from essential physical property. It authorizes DACS to administer a cost-sharing program to assist timber owners in specified counties whose timber was damaged as a result of Hurricane Idalia, and it appropriates $37.5 million from the General Revenue Fund to DACS to fund this program. Additionally, the bill extends the terms of loans from 2 years to 5 years under the Local Government Emergency Revolving Bridge Loan Program. It extends the prohibition on burdensome restrictions on local building processes enacted in the 23 session in response to Hurricanes Ian and Nicole, and clarifies that it's no longer a 100-mile radius. It lays out the counties and municipalities affected. It extends the repeal date for the Florida Emergency Management Assistance Foundation. This bill may have these programs that we're talking about today, but folks, I'll tell you, this bill is going to make a huge difference in our fiscally constrained rural counties that cannot tax their way, they can't fundraise their way, they can't, there's no way for them to fund anything that comes up in the normal course of business. I'm really excited about this bill today because it's going to offer a lot of benefits to these rural counties that otherwise would just be left behind and forgotten. That is the bill, Mr. Chair, and we do have one amendment.
Thank you. Members, we're going to take questions on the bill as it is now before we get into amendments. Are there questions? All right, we're going to move into amendments. Representative Hunchowski, you're recognized to explain amendment number one, barcode 202571.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. And so what this amendment does, it expands the scope of the My Safe Florida Homes program by adding condo units and condo associations, making them eligible for this funding. It would limit the funding for each condo unit to $5,000, and in the condominium association, $2,500 per homesteaded unit with a cap of $500,000. And the point of this amendment is to give those condo unit homeowners the opportunity to also take advantage of this incredibly popular program that allows homeowners to make their homes more resilient, which in turn then helps to lower the property insurance rates. Thank you. That's the amendment, Mr. Chair.
Members, questions on the amendment? Public testimony on the amendment. Travis Moore with the Community Associations Institute is a proponent. You're recognized, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. Just very briefly, I want to thank Representative Hunchowski for this very good amendment that provides some parity for those of your Floridians that reside as homesteaded owners in condos and condominiums. And I'm happy to, condominium associations, and I'm happy to answer any questions you might have.
Thank you for coming in. Members, we're in debate. Any debate on Representative Hunchowski's amendment? Seeing none, you're recognized to close on the amendment.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. I just want to thank everybody for the opportunity to present this amendment. I think it's really important. In the district that I live in, there are so many seniors who are on limited incomes who are affected by these property insurance rates, and this would be one more expansion of an amazingly good program to help them with that. And with that, I close, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Having closed on her amendment, all those in favor signify by saying yay.
Yay.
All opposed, no.
No.
Show the amendment not adopted. Members, we are going to move on. Representative Daly, I believe you're going to present on behalf of Representative Williams, on behalf of Representative Hunchowski. Do I have that right? And that's amendment number two, barcode 787353. You are recognized, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, in April of this year,
Broward County and more specifically the Fort Lauderdale and surrounding community witnessed devastating record-breaking rainfall and storms totaling about 25 inches of rain in 12 hours, devastating local business, homes, everything, tourism in that area. So this amendment, good amendment by my friend and colleague, Representative Williams, provides a sales tax reimbursement on items purchased for flood mitigation during the flood emergency in April of 2023. It also lays out the mechanism for obtaining the refund, affirming that it is only available through the refund. And that is the amendment, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Daly. Members, questions on the amendment? Representative Cheney, you're recognized.
Is this a friendly amendment?
Would you like to maybe... Representative Daly, you're recognized.
Representative Cheney, I'm friendly, so yes, I would say it is a friendly amendment.
Representative Cheney, perhaps in Chair Schoaf's close or debate, he can answer that a little better. Further questions, members? Seeing none, public testimony on this amendment. We don't have any. Okay, we're in debate. Representative Schoaf, you are recognized in debate.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for that question, Representative Cheney. This issue, as well as the previous amendment offered, both are issues that I feel we should address in regular session. It's not specific enough for us to address in this special session today. So it is an unfriendly amendment at this time.
Further debate, members. Representative Daly, you're recognized to close on your amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd waive close on the friendliest amendment we're going to see today.
Having waived close on the friendliest amendment that's unfriendly, apparently. All those in favor signify by saying yay.
Yay.
All opposed, no.
No.
Show the amendment not adopted. Representative Schoaf, I understand you have amendment number 3, barcode 301105. You're recognized, sir, to explain your amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This amendment clarifies that any lien for DAC's loan program is subordinate only to any mortgage held by a financial institution as defined and Chapter 655.005, Florida Statutes. That is the amendment.
Members, we're on questions on Representative Schoaf's amendment. Do we have questions? Do we have public testimony? Members, we're in debate. Is there any debate? Representative Schoaf, you recognize the close on your amendment.
Waive close.
Having waived close, members, all in favor, signify by saying yay.
Yay.
Yay. Opposed, no. Show the amendment adopted. Members, we're back on the bill as amended. Is there anyone in the audience that wishes to speak? Chief Financial Officer, Mr. Jimmy Petronas, you're recognized, sir.
Hey, Chairman. How are you? Thanks for having me. Eric, good to see you, sir. Members, thank y'all for coming together and assembling for, I think, which is a number of noble causes. The one that I'm here to talk about today is the continued funding of the My Safe Florida Home program. The irony of this is this program has been around 2007. Special session took place. I was a member there. And as this insurance market kind of comes and goes over the years, demands and stresses on it, y'all have seen wisdom to come and assemble and try to react with ways that empower the consumer to make the type of investments in their buildings to make them more resilient. And ultimately, in this particular case, the average participant, because of your good work, has seen a savings in their premium of $1,000 per year. So real savings, because at the end of the day, when you make that bubble, when you make that home tougher, harder to penetrate, ultimately the risk is less. If the risk is less, and there's less likely that they're paying out claims. Just a little bit of housekeeping numbers. Mr. Chairman, 87,000 home inspections have been made. Representative Skidmore was at that session. There has been almost 41,000 total grants that have been applied for. 21,000 of these grants have been approved. And so now 3,100 grants have been paid out, $28 million. The average participant from the time they apply for the money through construction, through final inspection, is about 110 days. So your timing right now is perfect, Mr. Chairman, because we're out of hurricane season, and it would be nice to be able to empower those homeowners to seize this opportunity while the wind's not blowing, to make as many of those improvements as humanly possible So when we do get in hurricane season in the spring and summer, that the homes are harder and the savings are realized. And that, Mr. Chairman, I'll be happy to answer any questions you might have.
Thank you for coming today, Chief. Good to see you.
Yes, sir. Great to see you.
Any questions, members? Chair Masullo, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you, Mr. CFO. Is the state going to be advertising this program perhaps a little better as we put some more money into it? Because I know in my district there's a lot of people that aren't as familiar with it as they should be.
Mr. Chairman.
You're recognized.
Thanks for that question, Rep. We have put dollars into marketing it. And I'll give you a perfect example. I was in South Florida during the first iteration of this when y'all funded it 2 years ago. And I'm listening to a radio spot. And the radio spot, it sounded like somebody was trying to describe a root canal to me over the radio. I had no idea what they were talking about. But because I was familiar with the program, I knew what it was. And I immediately, I questioned our team. I said, look, I said, you've got to dumb this thing down to a bunch of 6- and 8-letter words. The average citizen who is listening to radio and hears this spot needs to understand that this investment equates to savings. Keep it as simple as you can. We have pivoted. Now, since the first installment, the legislature, y'all were wise to take this thing statewide. There's a lot of members in this room that have constituents that like to take advantage of it. So, again, some parts of the state have had greater exposure than your part of the state or where my old house district was. So there's definitely a little less awareness. But I'm committed to making sure that as many people that can take advantage as it can. And again, thank y'all for just wanting to assemble, put these dollars together and knock down the demand. Because there is a real demand there. And the reality is people will see the benefit, the true little $1,000 a year. Thank you, sir, for that question.
Additional questions, members? Thank you, Chief.
Thanks. Appreciate y'all.
Chris Doolin, Small County Coalition, is a proponent. You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Chris Doolin on behalf of the Small County Coalition. Most of the counties that are affected by Idalia are in our organization. And I wanted to come forward today to say a couple things. One, a major thank you and appreciation to Representative Schoaf, Senator Simon, Commissioner Simpson, CFO Petronas. Most of you have the experience of a post-hurricane situation, the day, the week, and you know what you have to do. Representative Schoaf's district is 11 different counties. They are primarily rural, they are agriculturally dependent, and they're very poor financially from a tax-based standpoint. To put a perspective on what fiscally constrained means, it means, I won't get into the actual detail, but every one of these counties, the value of a mill of property tax is substantially below per capita what the rest of the counties are at, substantially below. This bill provides a comprehensive framework. There's a lot of stuff in here that was in previous legislation for Ian and Nicole and Michael. And so it does set up a comprehensive response. It sets the framework for recovery, but in speaking about that, the impacts on the tax roll from the refunds that are provided, we don't know what that's going to be yet. In the past, we have waited for a period of time until we get an assessment of the actual impact on the tax roll. So we feel there's a commitment to come back in the regular session, take a look at what that costs, what are these impacts from the refunds. And so we appreciate that. And I want to thank you very much. And we appreciate it, Senator, or Representative.
Thank you. Jason Chandler with Grimway Farms is a proponent. You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Jason Chandler. I'm from Mayo, Florida. I'm the farm manager for Grimway Farms. We farm about 4,500 acres of vegetables scattered across Suwanee County, Hamilton County, and Madison County. So the morning of August 30th was a pretty tough morning for us. We had a lot of small items had just been planted crop that was coming out of the ground. We lost, I'm going to say maybe it was right around 1,000 acres out of 1,200 that morning. Pivots turned over, fences knocked down, trees all over the place. Yeah, I made the comment earlier, as I made the ride, tried to make the ride that morning to sort of assess things, we were okay at home, but as I made the ride around as much of the county as I could get into, I was just amazed that we hadn't heard of a loss of life. It's pretty tough in that part of the world if anybody hadn't been through there since then. Representative Shope, I know you were over there quite a bit. You know, the hurricane, it damaged more than just the crops. You know, we had some crop that was produce that had already been grown and packed and was held in coolers at the time. When you lose power, you lose hope for just a little bit of time. But thankfully, you know, it was within just a few hours, we had calls from Commissioner Simpson's office. People were working in the background trying to find resources and whether it was backup generators or talking with the local electric co-ops, trying to get us, you know, trying to figure out where were the key pieces of infrastructure that we needed to back, you know, we needed all going. We didn't even need our homes back up and going, but we needed a few key things back up and going. And thank you to Representative Shope and the commissioner's office with the resources they had at that time. They really went to work for us, and I don't know how, but within just a few hours later that afternoon, I was standing in the building and the power came back on. To this day, I don't know how it came back on so quickly. So thank you for that. Unfortunately, we live in a state where hurricanes are not an anomaly. It's something that we're going to face again and again. Hopefully not in my 47 years. I've never experienced anything like we've experienced in this part of the state, and hopefully I don't have to go through it again. But it's going to happen again. And this bill and this type of funding will help. It will help us now. It will help us in the future. And honestly, investments like this, you know, they have the ability to make generational change. And so it may not be just our farm this year or next year, but it may be the difference between passing one farm to the next generation. So thank you for your support. I want to thank you again. One more time, Representative Shope, you spent a lot of time in our area, and the people of our area know that and saw that. And so we really appreciate that. Commissioner Simpson's office, the resources it's provided to his office through you all. Thank you for that. They were a huge help and continue to be to this day. I thank you for allowing me to come and speak today. Thank you very much.
Thank you for coming. Paul Owens, Thousand Friends of Florida, here for information. You're recognized, Paul.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members. I'm Paul Owens, president of 1,000 Friends of Florida. We believe in building resilient and sustainable communities through a robust local planning process. We recognize and support the provisions in this bill that will provide badly needed relief for the farmers, homeowners, and communities that were devastated by Hurricane Idalia, and we compliment the sponsor for these provisions. However, we do oppose the provision in the bill, Section 15, that would take an already short-sighted policy enacted earlier this year in response to Hurricane Ian in Senate Bill 250 and prolong it for another couple of years from 2024 to 2026. This provision would prevent local governments in 10 counties from enacting additional sound planning measures to ensure that their communities are safer and more resilient from future storms, not destined for more destruction. As the previous speaker said, we will endure more hurricanes. This provision would prohibit those officials from adopting or even proposing more proactive measures to their comprehensive plans or land development regulations for the next 3 years, putting them actually at a disadvantage to other counties that are still at liberty to adopt measures to protect lives, property, and tax dollars in their communities. Ostensibly, this provision would allow property owners to rebuild homes and businesses damaged by Ian, but in practice, could also be used to prevent measures to harden or raise buildings in areas prone to storm surge or flooding, or to prevent construction in the most vulnerable areas. These and other proactive measures could be critical when the next storm hits. I will remind you that in January, this past January, the governor issued an executive order that included a call to, quote, build upon our efforts protecting Florida communities from flooding, sea level rise, and future storm events. This provision would undercut that strong policy in the governor's executive order. So we urge you to give elected officials in these 10 counties the same authority as their counterparts in all of Florida's other communities. Don't take away their ability to save their residents' lives, protect vulnerable property, and be good stewards of taxpayer dollars. Don't make a bad policy worse. We urge you to remove this provision from the bill before making it law. Thank you.
Mr. Owens, it sounds to me, on here it says it's for information only, but that sounded an awful lot like you're an opponent.
We are an opponent of this particular provision.
But not of it in its entirety.
No, sir.
Okay. We just wanted that on the record.
Okay. Yeah.
Rod Land, wishing to speak as a proponent. You're recognized.
Good afternoon. I'm Rod Land. I'm a fifth-generation row crop farmer and a first-generation dairy farmer from Lafayette County. I lived through some pretty bad devastation. I'll give y'all a brief overview. We lost five structures on our farm, irreparable. One was a 60 by 240 foot feed barn at the dairy, has to be replaced. I do have figures on replacing it, $120,000 to $125,000. Don't have figures on replacing the others, but for us to get back what we lost is going to be a cost north of $200,000 to replace buildings. We had what we thought and what our crop advisors thought was probably as good a crop of peanuts and as good a crop of cotton coming on as had ever been on our farm. Well, we got damaged to the peanuts. They was to a point that we could go to digging immediately. The good Lord didn't send any rain for a few days. We survived on them. It destroyed our cotton crop. Never seen anything like it in the cotton field before. I heard some of them from Michael, some of my friends in West Florida, talking about what happened. I lived through it. I want to, once again, thank Representative Shoaf for his efforts in trying to help us. I would be remiss if I didn't thank Commissioner Simpson and Senators Albritton and Simon for what they're trying to do to help us. And I want to thank y'all. Y'all are the first legislature in my lifetime that has recognized any importance of agriculture to the state of Florida. I thank y'all for it. I commend you for it. I ask you to give us the help that we need to survive and to thrive in agriculture in the state of Florida. Thank you for your time. Thank you again, Representative.
Thank you, sir. Richard Schwab is wishing to speak and is a proponent. You're recognized.
Good afternoon. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I personally want to say thank you very, very much to Commissioner Simpson and his lead effort on trying to get this bill passed. But most importantly, I wanted to say a heartfelt thank you to my representative, Jason Shove. The man texted me on the day that the storm came through, asked me if we were doing better, doing okay. He truly does care about the people in his 11 counties. And unfortunately, not everybody in this room has the privilege of being able to represent people in rural North Florida, because it's one of the greatest areas in our wonderful state that we live in. And he truly does take pride in representing us and taking care of us and looking after our interests and our needs in the people's house. And I thank you very much for that. I want to say that I don't look like him today, but I am a third generation business owner that happens to be a logger. And I cut timber for a living. And what we do is we help landowners like what we're trying to help today with this legislation to harvest their timber. And we manage and manicure their land with our equipment and how we handle it. And we do it in an environmentally sustainable way. And we're very, very proud of that. Our business started in 1960, cutting on the land base in and around Perry, Florida. And at one time, we were working on over a million acres of one contiguous landowner. And that land has since been sold and moved around, and it's about 500,000 acres a day. And I haven't cut timber on that land in about 5 years. I work for private landowners all across this state, in North Florida and South Georgia. And what we're able to do is we're able to impact and touch their lives in a real meaningful way. And they grow timber. It's a row crop for them in most instances for a 15 to 20 year process for the first time they touch it, and it may go to 30 to 50 years. And so they may only see one crop of timber in their lifetime or their over the life of their farm, but it's multi-generational. And what happened is when Hurricane Idalia came through in late August, our community and our timber stands survived very, very well at 80-mile-an-hour winds. I mean, we had a few whipped-over trees, and I had a few broke-out tops in my yard and where I lived. But when the eye wall came through Perry, Florida, and veered and went into Madison County, Lafayette County, as well as the Suwannee and in Hamilton County, it destroyed timber like you've never believed. What Representative Shove said, that the storm like that of that magnitude has not hit our area since the 1800s. And I did the math earlier, and that's 120 years, or roughly 120 years since the last major hurricane has come in our area. And trees grow and grow and grow unless you harvest them. And so we had some 125 to 30-year-old water oaks, live oaks, totally destroyed in our communities and on these people's timber farms. And it has made a devastating impact that will resonate in my mind for my lifetime. We will never see the timber back, the renewable resource back the way it was in my lifetime in those stands. And so this little bit of help that FDACS wants to provide and that you're in charge of funding is going to help landowners put timber back on their land that they need to start. Because what happens is private landowners do what's best for their investment of their land. They need that land working for themselves. And so whether they have trees growing on it, they may clear it and make pasture or row crops, or worst case scenario, they may break it up into ranchettes or have people living on that land in small communities again. That's devastating. What we need to do is have timber growing on that land, because scientists know that the best way to filter water when it comes out of the sky and goes onto the ground is through a timber farm. It is sustainable. It's the best way to manage land, and I really do appreciate your effort, and we speak strongly as a forest industry in support of the idea of funding to replant landowners in smaller acreages. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Ernest Fulford. Fulford Family Farms is a proponent wishing to speak. You're recognized, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, Representative Shove, for sponsoring this. I am a third-generation farmer on our current farm in Jefferson County, fifth-generation Floridian. My grandfather started the farm back in 1945 when he got out of World War II, and I've had the privilege to take over after my dad and me and my son now. We currently grow cotton, peanuts, soybeans, corn, boiling peanuts. I'm probably missing something, sweet corn. But anyway, our we were damaged back in from Michael, and we never got any federal help from that. We did get some help, a bridge loan from the state on that, which we're still trying to pay back. But this Hurricane Idalia, it was another blow. You know, we're trying to get up and we get hit again. So this would be a great benefit to us and help us to stay in business. And our peanuts kind of survived this hurricane, but the worst, the cotton, like Mr. Lamb was saying earlier, the cotton was really just, it was messed up. It just breaks your heart. Go out there and see it laying flat on the ground. Looks like a steamroller, you know, rolled across it. But anyway, this would be a big benefit to our, not just me, but other farmers in the area. And like I said, federal government seems to not really care, and we fall through the cracks. I guess our farm's not really big enough to get any of that help. But anyway, I thank you again, and thank you.
Thank you, sir. Stephen Dix, president of the Columbia County Farm Bureau, is a proponent wishing to speak. You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Stephen Dix. I'm the president of Columbia County Farm Bureau. I also sit on the State Farm Bureau Board representing District 6, which is Suwannee, Hamilton, and Columbia counties. Our operation, we grow beef cattle, grass seed, hay, oats, and formerly we were tobacco farmers along with peanuts and corn. And right now we're farming about 450 acres. When the storm hit, every storm is a little different. Some of them are rainmakers, some of them are windmakers, some of them are both. Hurricane Idalia was a windmaker. There was very little rain, 3 to 4 inches. We were dry, and the crops soaked, the ground soaked it right up. But the wind was horrendous. And some of the people that have suffered the most are some of the small cow-calf landowners, cow-calf operations, and a lot of those people are retired or in their seniors. They're looking for a few cows to supplement their family income. As stated earlier by some of the other people, the hurricane devastated the hay production. Instead of getting a full cutting, they were a loss. The last cutting was very poorly. Many of the forestry stands were mentioned. They were damaged also. But we in Farm Bureau have created a disaster committee to try to help these folks that are having these losses, and we were able to ship 6 semi-loads of post and wire and staples and T-post to help our friends and family within the Farm Bureau family. That wasn't enough. We could have shipped 500 loads of post and wire and T-post and so forth, because see, only they were divvied out as best they could by the Farm Bureaus in those counties, but it wasn't much, but it was a help, and it was a little bit of hope we were trying to instill within those folks that people care. People do care. I would like to thank Commissioner Wilton Simpson, Senator Corey Simon, Jennifer Bradley, Senator Bradley, Representative Jason Shove, and Representative Chuck Brannon. I see him sitting back there in the back, for promoting this bill, and I would encourage you to pass it. The folks that live in the Suwannee Valley and the Big Bend certainly need the help. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Timothy Solano, Cedar Key Aquaculture Association, is wishing to speak. You're recognized, sir. Are you a proponent, opponent, info? What are you? You're for it? Okay, we'll mark you accordingly. You're recognized, sir.
Thank you. Good afternoon. My name is Timothy Solano. I'm a second-generation clam farmer and wholesaler from Cedar Key. I'm also a 14th generation Floridian with roots dating back to 1607. I, along with my 2 siblings, run one of the largest wholesales in Cedar Key. We sell our product to Costco, which goes all the way up to New York. Cedar Key is home to some of the best clams, personally, I could say. I love eating them, love taking them home for dinner, and so do all the people that buy them from us. Clam farming is also an essential industry in our small little coastal community. Before Hurricane Idalia, we were on track to break $50 million in sales this year. When Hurricane Idalia barreled through our town, it changed our lives forever. Debris from the riptide, such as crab traps, docks, trees, and other building material were thrown into our middle of our leases, causing bags to be torn up and swept out to sea. Bags were also compromised, causing them to tangle up with their neighboring bags, which would not allow the seed to resettle, causing clams to die off as well. With that death, you also have predators that get introduced in to come for a little snack on your bags. These losses in the timing of the storm are particularly devastating to us because December and November are our biggest months in the industry with the holidays. And with this death that we've had, a lot of us are not going to be able to do our holiday orders. We feel this squeeze very hard because the money from the federal ELAP assistance program will not be available till March of 2024, which is a long time for a clam farmer to wait. In the meantime, shops are closing doors, people are being laid off, and wholesalers are having to cut back on their sales, which is lost revenue not only for them, but also for the state of Florida. But we want to say thank you to Senator Simon, Representative Schoaf, and Commissioner Simpson. With this essential legislation, it's a good effort that we need to receive the relief that we need. We're also very thankful that we were thought of on this level to be brought forward, and I'm very happy to be up here to represent the clam community. But there are some other things we still need help with. There are small farmers that aren't able to purchase seed because they have no revenue coming in from their clams being dead. Wholesale farms that are having to come out of pocket to replace AC units, walls, buildings, different things like that. And that's keeping them from processing clams and bringing in revenue as well. A lot of our bags and equipment were damaged and swept away, which we're unable to recover, which is also money that we're going to have to come out of pocket to replace. The loan program and sales tax forgiveness in this bill is a great first step, and we're hope to see more in the future. Again, thank you all so much for your time.
Thank you, sir. All right, members, I want to read folks wishing to waive. Jared Grigas, Florida Association of Counties, waiving in support. Jim Spratt, Florida Nursery, Grower, and Landscape Association, waiving in support. Andrew Walmsley, Florida Farm Bureau Federation, waiving in support. Trip Hunter, Florida Fruit and Vegetable Association, waiving in support. Jennifer Ashton, Florida Association of Building Inspectors, waiving in support. Michael Beardsley, Southeastern Wood Producers Association, Inc., waiving in support. Murphy Kennedy with the Florida Realtors is waiving in support. David Cullen, Sierra Club, Florida, is wishing to speak. Information only. You're recognized. We were on a real roll. And then it was like someone pulled the emergency brake. You're recognized, Mr. Cullen.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Owens from 1,000 Friends made a number of the points that I was going to make, so I'm basically going to jump to the close. The preemption that is extended for another 2 years is coming not to the Idalia folks. I mean, we understand the importance of this bill to the folks that were hit and hurt by Hurricane Idalia, no question about that. But Section 15 is about the folks that were hit by Ian. And this extension of the preemption is coming just when communities may be considering intelligent land use policies and changes that will protect life and property and reduce risk to property. This bill is saying when they want to do something, no, just sit on your hands. We think that it's very important that you strike Section 15 from this bill. Thank you.
Mr. Cullen, just to clarify, you're here for information only, but that sounded a little bit like an opponent. Is it just opposition in that portion of the bill, and you're a proponent of
opposition? The opposition is to the amendment, to the section, not to the bill as a whole at this point.
Very good. Thank you, sir. Jennifer Ashton, Florida Association of Building Inspectors, is waiving in support. I think we already had that one. Mark Jeffries with Orange County is waiving in support. Did I say support or opposition? Okay. Isabel Giarbarino, Florida Department of Agriculture and Consumer Services, is waiving in support. Members, we are now in debate. Representative Ranking Member Driscoll, you're recognized in debate.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Rep. Schoaf, for this very good bill, and thank you to the members of the audience who came and traveled to be here today and gave up your time to let us know how this bill would impact you and impact your industries. It's important for us to hear that, and I'll be up on this bill today and would encourage the rest of the members to be up as well. I did just want to flag that issue about the preemption, and we just heard a little bit of testimony about that. It's concerning to me because we want to make sure that our local governments are building in ways that are smart and that are sensitive to their communities around them. And so it always makes me a little nervous when we have these preemptions in these bills. But I don't believe in necessarily throwing the baby out with the bathwater, and so we should move forward today. But there is still a little opportunity to have some conversation between now and tomorrow. The other thing that I wanted to flag, and I was glad to hear that there are conversations that can continue into regular session. I know what Williams is not here, but she's trying to do a good thing for her community in Broward that was subject to flooding. I do think that this should be open to condominiums. So thank you, Rep. Honchowski, for your amendment as well. But we'll be up on the bill today. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Driscoll. Chair Rommel, you're recognized in debate.
Thank you, Chairman. And Representative Shoaf, I want to thank you for bringing in this good bill. There's so much good in it from Save Our Homes. And yes, the portion that a couple folks talked about on the preemption in my area, that is so important because we had some local governments trying to take away the private property rights of individuals in the midst of a hurricane Ian and immediately after. So I appreciate your effort in protecting those rights and nothing more important than protecting private property rights. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Rommel. Members seeing no further debate. Representative Shoaf. Chair Shoaf, you're recognized to close on your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. First, I want to thank Speaker, Chair Leak, Vice Chair McClure, and Governor DeSantis for supporting this legislation. You can't do it without the leadership leading the way. I also want to thank every member of this legislature for allowing me to run this bill on all of our behalf. Recovering from a disaster is a long, hard road. The idea of someone just picking up where they left off after they lost their home or their business, it's heartbreaking. Many of you know that I represent a very rural part of this state. All but one of the counties I represent are fiscally constrained, and when we get hit with something like this, we just need a little help. And on the agriculture part, I'm really proud of what we are doing with this program. We've never had a program like the Ag Loan. You heard from our farmers today on how it's going to impact them and their families and the products that they produce that we all enjoy. They are the literal lifeblood of our state. And I'm happy to say that the state of Florida is stepping up today in a way we never have to have their backs. Again, I want to thank you all for your support for this great bill. And with that, I'll close.
Having closed on this bill, Ms. Sherrill, please call the roll on the bill.
Chair Leak, Vice Chair McClure?
Yes.
Committee Whip Mooney?
Yes.
Ranking Member Driscoll?
Yes.
Representatives Altman?
Yes.
Andrade?
Yes.
Bell?
Yes.
Benjamin?
Yes.
Brannon?
Yes.
Rosado Cabrera?
Yes.
Cheney?
Yes.
Daly?
Yes.
Fine?
Yes.
Garrison?
Yes.
Gottlieb?
Yes.
Grant? Yes. Gregory?
Yes.
Honchowski?
Yes.
Marsulo?
Yes.
Payne?
Yes.
Perez?
Yes.
Rommel?
Yes.
Salzman?
Yes.
Shoaf?
Yes.
Silvers?
Yes.
Skidmore?
Yes.
Stevenson?
Yes.
Tomko?
Yes.
Williams? Antone Exficio?
Yes.
By your vote, show the bill passes. Members, we're going to move on to House Bill 7C by Chair Fine, Security Grants. Chair Fine, you're recognized to introduce your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We live in the scariest time in the history of most Jews that live in Florida today. HB 7C is intended to help solve that problem to some small degree. The bill would allocate $35 million in emergency security funding to help institutions that have concerns about their security today. $10 million of it, and there will be a friendly amendment presented by Representative Driscoll shortly to increase that amount. $10 million of it would go to fund a program that we created last session, a state-level nonprofit security grant program. We created it last session, but we did not fund it. $10 million would go into that program. It would be eligible to any organization that can show that they have an elevated threat of risk from the kinds of things that we're seeing today. And the second part of the bill would allocate $25 million to Jewish day schools, and again, emergency security funding in order for them to be protected and safe here in the short term. And that is the bill.
Having introduced the bill, members, we're in questions on the bill. Are there questions? Representative Antone, you're recognized.
All right, thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Fine, just a quick question. Are there any dollars in your bill for historically black colleges and universities, security hardening, non-hardening?
Representative Anton, I think we're going to have a discussion about that in the amendments, but...
But I can answer that.
Yeah, you're recognized.
The amendment just changes the amount. The $10 million in the first portion of the bill could be eligible to an HBCU if they can demonstrate, again, an elevated threat and risk. For example, you know, we saw that incident in Jacksonville, which started at an HBCU, did not end there. But so again, if there are institutions that show that they're at an elevated risk, that money is not directly targeted towards Jewish institutions. Although again, as DEM has to rank things, I think, you know, they'll look, and at any given moment in time, certain organizations might be at a more elevated risk than others. But it does not exclude HBCUs.
Further questions, members? All right, I understand we have two amendments. Representative Driscoll, you are recognized to explain amendment number one, barcode 690227.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this amendment very simply increases the amount eligible for the Division of Emergency Management to manage from $10 million to $20 million. And the purpose of this is because we know that there are institutions out there, including our HBCUs, that are subject to increased threats and risk levels. In fact, our HBCUs have been going through a process with the Department of Homeland Security to conduct risk assessments and to try to understand where their campuses are vulnerable. And so by increasing this pool of funding, of course, it's eligible or funding for institutions beyond HBCUs, but we do know that those institutions have a particular need, and so by increasing this pool, hopefully we will also increase the pool of institutions that will receive funding, and that is the amendment.
Members, questions on the amendment? Representative Benjamin, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to be, just needed some clarification. So we have $25 million for Jewish day schools, and then we have $10 million, or now $20 million for everybody else. Is that correct?
You recognize.
My amendment doesn't speak to the, thank you, Mr. Chair, to the part that's available for Jewish day schools, but that's my understanding in the bill. That's correct.
Further questions, members? All right, public testimony on the amendment. Seeing none, we are in debate on the amendment. Representative Hunchofsky.
Thank you, Chair. And I just want to thank Leader Driscoll for this amendment. And I want to thank everybody who's sitting on this committee for working together to support this amendment. I appreciate it very much.
Further debate, members? Chair Fine, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Again, I would reiterate, you know, this is friendly. There are a lot of institutions in the world that unfortunately have elevated threats. And frankly, while I appreciate $10 million getting us to $20 million, I don't think any of us are going to say that's necessarily enough. But this is intended as an emergency and funds that will get us through next session. And it's a sad day that, frankly, we need any of it. But I appreciate the amendment, and I want everybody to know it is friendly.
Representative Anton.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just want to applaud you for this great amendment. There are additional institutions, especially our historically black colleges and universities, that need some money for hardening, but I applaud you for this amendment, and I'm in support of this amendment.
Representative Driscoll, you're recognized to close on your amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And really, I'd like to thank the Speaker, Rep. Fine, the leadership of the Florida Legislative Black Caucus for all working together to try to get this pool of money to a good amount that we can all be satisfied with. And again, it's just really about being able to increase the institutions that are eligible to go on and to receive this money. Hopefully we can continue the conversations as the rules are developed for how this grant money would be distributed. But I think it's definitely a step in the right direction, and I encourage everyone to vote up on the amendment. Thank you.
Having closed on our amendment, all those in favor signify by saying yay.
Yay.
Yay. Opposed, no. Show the amendment adopted. Representative Fine, you are recognized to explain amendment number two, barcode 849379.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is also an amendment that just moves some things around. So the First Amendment increased the amount of money. This does not. It moves things around. The original bill of the $25 million for Jewish day schools, $5 million would go to operating expenses $5 million would go to hardening, and $20 million would go to operating expenses. This amendment changes that mix. It keeps the dollar amount the same. $15 million now would be going to hardening expenses, and $10 million for operating expenses. Same $25 million. Just moves between the two categories, and that is the amendment.
Members, questions on the amendment? Public testimony on the amendment? Seeing none, members were in debate. Anybody have debate? Chair Fine, you recognize to close.
Wave.
Having waved close, all those in favor signify by saying yay.
Yay. Yay.
Opposed, no. Show the amendment adopted. Members, we're back on the bill. We are in public comments. Anyone wishing to speak? Abraham Lubon is waving in opponent. Come on up. I think we got you. Waving in support and an opponent. You're right, sir.
Hi. My name's Avram Lubon. I'm from Agudath Israel of Florida, a nonprofit organization that advocates and represents for the Orthodox needs of the Jewish community. I have my speech scripted out here, but I really am going to skip it, and I want to speak from the heart. It may not come out as profound, but it's going to be straight from the heart. Ever since October 7th, our world has been turned upside down. Certainly, our biggest priority is we're concerned for our brothers and sisters in the land of Israel, whether it's family, friends, people that are citizens, soldiers fighting in the war. But unfortunately, it doesn't end there. We're really concerned for ourselves here in Florida as well. Ever since October 7th, we've been seeing so many incidents of hate and anger and hostility directed towards us. Even here in Florida, we've had incidents in Miami Beach, Hollandale Beach, Parkland, Cooper City, Aventura, Boca Raton. We're seeing a lot there's been a lot of incidents of people passing by synagogues and yelling anti-Semitic slurs. We've been seeing a lot of incidents of people leaving graffiti, whether it's kill the Jews, gas the Jews, really terrible, terrible messages that you would never want to see, you'd never want your kids to see. And we're concerned, we're scared. Just an illustration that I think brings it out. A couple nights ago, I was at home relaxing with my wife at 11 o'clock at night, and something fell in the back room. Something fell out of the closet, which is a pretty common, normal thing to happen. And my wife, literally, she got so scared, and she panicked. She thought somebody was barging in through the front door, and she was just concerned for the worst. And it really illustrates we're living with a fear. We're just not ourselves. We're afraid. We're constantly looking over our shoulder. There's just, whenever we watch the news, social media, there's just so much violence, so much hate, and it's really concerning. So I think that the allocation to the nonprofit security grant, which would be able to go to synagogues, houses of worship, as well as the $25 million that would go towards the Jewish Day School Fund, it would really be incredibly meaningful to our community. It's going to prevent further acts of hate, it's going to deter further incidents, and it's going to give us what we really need, which is a reassurance to know that we're safe and that we're protected and that we're being looked after. So I really hope that we can gather unanimous support for this bill, and I thank you very much.
Thank you. Ben Jacobson is a proponent. You're recognized.
Dear Mr. Chair and esteemed members of the Appropriations Committee, I'm Ben Jacobson, and I'm here today to discuss a matter of great importance, the safety of our children. I serve as the chairman of the security committee for our shul, which is situated in Surfside. Our establishment is widely recognized, featuring a full-time synagogue and a sizable preschool, making it a prominent and well-respected community institution. The governor has visited our location frequently, signing important legislation and addressing the issues of anti-Semitism in his speeches. However, when he and his security team departs, it falls on me to continue to ensure the safety of everyone inside the building. I took on this volunteer role nearly 5 years ago, just before my eldest of three children started school. As parents, it's our duty to do all we can to safeguard our children, especially in the face of the current threats we confront. With an annual budget of nearly $600,000 and staffing requirements of close to 400 hours per week, for security alone, I can confidently say that from a community perspective, we are doing everything in our power to keep protect our children. Nevertheless, we need your support. Our facility spans almost a block city long in an urban environment and remains open for extended hours. Our members include some of the most influential and prominent figures in the Jewish community. Because of this, it's imperative that we maintain a high-caliber security staff. The majority of our team members are former combat veterans of the United States military, and we are proud to hire them, ensuring they possess the necessary expertise to keep our children and communities safe. They are proactive, diligent, and have successfully handled various critical security situations during my tenure, including bomb threats, unidentified suspicious objects, and potentially threatening individuals. They work in close collaboration with the dedicated members of the Surfside Police Department and with assistance from Bal Harbor and Bay Harbor PD. As the renowned Jewish scholar Hillel once said, if not you, then who? And if not now, then when? I urge you to approve the necessary funds and pass this critical bill. This way, when you go to sleep tonight, you won't have to question if your vote could have played a role in preventing the next attack. Instead, you'll leave here this week with the knowledge that each and every one of you done everything in your power to safeguard the well-being of your Jewish constituents. We hold firm to the principle of never again, and with your continued support, we will continue to uphold this commitment for the Jewish community and the great state of Florida. I'd like to thank Representative Fine for bringing this forward and for supporting us, and if you have any other questions, I'm available. Thank you.
Thank you. Maj Kagan Daniel, Greater Miami Jewish Federation. Wishing to speak.
Good afternoon, elected officials. I'm here really not to repeat everything that's been said from the morning through now. I'm here to offer our gratitude on behalf of the Greater Miami Jewish Federation. I am honored to be Jewish Community Relations Council Chair. This is my third and last year, but I've been an active Jewish leader for many, many years. We have always relied on funding and support from yourselves. I want to thank Representative Fine personally for bringing the safety of the Jewish community and the citizens of Florida to the forefront. I stand at a unique juncture. I am an immigrant. I am an Iranian American Floridian Jew. My family, part of my family, left Iran in 1979. I was 11 years old. My sister was 9. We had a newborn baby brother. My father was stuck after we left in Iran with a hostage crisis for another 3 years. The safety of Jews worldwide is extremely important to me. The safety of Floridians altogether is extremely important. I know we may not all end up loving each other and, you know, agreeing on everything. However, we must all feel safe. We must all have civil discourse and respect for one another. I appreciate what you're all doing. I want to urge you to secure our schools, our campuses, and the safety of the citizens of the state of Florida. Thank you.
Thank you. Eli Hagler is a proponent wishing to speak. You're recognized.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Eli Hagler, and I'm the executive director of Browser Maimonides Academy, a private Jewish day school in Dania Beach, Florida, with more than 660 students from nursery 2 through 8th grade. I stand before you today to advocate for additional state funding for our Jewish day school. It's essential that we ensure a safe and secure environment for our students, and I urge you to consider the situation currently in Israel, particularly the recent terrorist attacks by Hamas, as a powerful motivator for providing the necessary support. Furthermore, I would like to draw your attention to the concerning uptick in anti-Semitism all over the country, but particularly right here in Florida. In recent years, we've witnessed a disturbing increase in anti-Semitic incidents that threaten the safety and well-being of our Jewish community. Hate crimes, vandalism, and discrimination have all seen a surge, leaving many feeling vulnerable and targeted. This wave of hatred and bigotry extends far beyond our borders and affects every Jewish person, regardless of where they are. Right here in Florida, we have not been immune to this alarming trend. Our Jewish community, like many others across the nation, has felt the weight of rising anti-Semitic incidents, and it's imperative that we stand together and face this head on. The recent events in Israel, where innocent lives have been tragically lost to acts of terror, serve as a stark reminder of the need for a safe educational environment. Our students should never have to worry about their safety when attending school. We must provide them with the protection and confidence they need to thrive academically and personally. Just a few weeks ago, on Friday, October 13th, Hamas called for a day of rage, This call to action created both a tremendous level of fear and anxiety, as well as a strengthening of Jewish pride. At my school, we worked together with private security, Florida Highway Patrol, and Broward County Sheriff to provide additional security to our school. Even with that, more than 30% of our students stayed home that day due to the choice of their parents. That's more than 200 children who didn't come to school, more than 1,500 educational hours lost. What message are we sending to our children if school is a place that they cannot feel safe? I ask you to consider the emotional toll that these incidents in Israel have on our students and our children. Their hearts ache for their fellow Jews overseas, and we have a responsibility to provide a safe haven for them right here in the great state of Florida. Over the last 3 years, our school has invested hundreds of thousands of dollars in creating and enhancing our security infrastructure. Prox readers, cameras, outdoor lighting, CCTV, bullet-resistant film on exterior windows, just to name a few. These are items that most schools and community service agencies don't even think about, yet we have to worry about it every day. I want to take a moment to recognize and thank Representative Fine. As a fellow Jew, Representative Fine knows firsthand how anti-Semitism may affect our daily life and the importance of not allowing it to do so. I'd also like to thank and recognize Teach Florida, who has advocated for these funds among many other important issues. And I'd like to finish with just two quick stories. A friend of mine told me this past weekend that his six-year-old asked him if children are only kidnapped at night or if it also happens during the day. Imagine explaining that to a six-year-old. And just last night, my wife suggested the idea of buying a gun for herself so that she can defend. And we didn't realize it, but my eight-year-old overheard the conversation. And his only question was, why would you need a gun? Thank you.
Eduardo Cornwarsel is a proponent wishing to speak. You're recognized.
Hello, representatives. My name is Eduardo Cornwarsel, and I'm a senior at Katz Yeshiva High School, South Florida, in Boca Raton. It's truly an honor to be before you today, and I'd also like to thank Representative Fine for bringing this issue, this important issue, to the stand. My journey to obtain a Jewish education is not like others. I live in Tampa, Florida, not South Florida, where my school is located. I commute back and forth every week and sacrifice my family and teenage life just to be a part of a Jewish environment, to be a part of something bigger than me. Being Jewish is what defines me. Being Jewish is what inspires me to be a better student, leader, and individual. Representatives, it is no secret that anti-Semitism is at an all-time high here in the United States. With the ongoing war in Israel, we have seen horrific messages, acts of violence, and vandalism going on in places where students, community leaders, and private citizens should feel safe. If the state of Florida cannot protect its approximately 100 Jewish day schools, how can we guarantee a safe Jewish future for these students? The statements on this bill propose a safer community and environment. Although many of the hateful attacks have been in places of higher education, that should not dissuade us from helping the day schools here in Florida. All the more so, we should be prepared to help. We should extinguish the sparks of anti-Semitism before they become a flame. If intelligent people who are awarded education in some of the most prestigious universities in the world can make hateful comments calling on the assault and murder of all Jews, what can we expect from people who are still in primary and secondary education? What can we expect from uneducated individuals who call on the extermination of all Jews? We do not want Florida to be impacted in the same way that Cornell or Cooper Union have been. This grant for Jewish day schools is not just an investment in infrastructure and gadgets. It's an investment in the safety and security of the next generation, my generation. When I walk into school every morning, I should always feel safe and assured that I won't be the next victim of a hateful crime. I shouldn't be fearing for my life because of a lack of security. Right now, the line between anti-Zionism and anti-Semitism has shattered. Any hate towards Israel is hate towards the Jewish people. Please ensure the safety of every student, teacher, staff member, and administrator by passing this bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Ariel Askotsky is a proponent of the bill wishing to speak.
Thank you, Commissioner. My name is Rabbi Ariel Askotsky. I'm the Chief Administrative Officer of Yeshiva Torah Chaim Torah Semes in North Miami Beach, representing about 1,400 students and over 600 families. We have Mr. Hagler and Eduardo, you've heard enough. You don't need to hear, so much more from me. We experience the exact same issues. We have parents calling us up nonstop, wanting more and more and more They're scared. I go to the synagogue every morning, usually walk. My wife's like, could you drive, please? You know, people are scared. I had people in the car next to me, you know, making certain screaming out of the window. It's good I didn't hear what they had to say. We're living in unprecedented times. I'd like to thank Representative Fine for his dedication to this issue. And Representative Driscoll, that amendment is also something that's very friendly and very helpful and will help everybody across all the communities in this really unfortunate time that we live in. So, just one, not the same story, but we've had cases of drones flying over our school. There was two other schools, you know, in our neighborhood close by that are having these issues. It's like, we had this happen one afternoon, all the kids started calling the parents, and half of them, the parents just came running to pick them up. Like most, last month, if we had seen a drone over the school, they'd have just looked up and said, hey, that's cool. You know, people are scared, and this is an emergency measure to try to deal with this, and we're all praying for peace for everybody. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Nancy Lothler is with the Florida PTA and is waving in support. Okay, members, we are in debate on the bill. Is there debate? Representative Cheney.
Thank you, Chair. I had a constituent call me who said they're considering pulling their grandchildren out of their Jewish daycare. And it's just a small example of why we have to do this, to preserve a culture. And hopefully this will do it. This will be enough. I obviously support this. And it's a sad day we have to do it.
Representative Anton.
All right, thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to applaud Representative Fine for bringing this good bill forward. I think it's a great thing to expend $35 million in emergency funds to make sure that our kids and our students are safe and secure. I would just ask that as we move forward, that we would consider some additional money during session for our historically black colleges and universities. In the year 2022, 57 historically black colleges and universities received bomb threats. And so Florida has four HBCUs. The campuses are wide open. They spread across a couple of blocks. And we need to make sure that our students are safe and secure. But it's a good bill, Representative Fine.
Representative Salzman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. In July alone, my temple, Temple Bethel, the oldest temple in Florida, was vandalized four times. Bricks thrown in the windows, spray paint on the walls, four times in July. Children in Sunday school. This has been happening for a long time. And what's happening in Israel, my husband has not slept in over a month. I have to remind him every day, turn off the news. I'm sorry. Thank you. Thank you for the bill. Thank you, members, for caring enough to allow this bill to come today. Thank you to the Speaker. Thank you to the Senate President, to the governor, to everybody. Thank you, Chair McClure, for chairing the committee today, and for everybody that came today to share your stories and your words of support. We hear you, and this isn't near enough. There's so much hate. It's just so much hate. I just pray for our nation, and I pray for the people in Florida, that this little piece, this little component can provide some sort of comfort to know that there are people in office in Florida that support you, that support people like my husband and my little 12-year-old son who doesn't even know if it's safe to go to school anymore. So thank you.
Chair Masullo.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I also want to thank Representative Fine and Leader Driscoll for putting together this great package. Discrimination and hate in any form is often the result of ignorance and also insecurity. And we're seeing that in droves in our country today. Just this weekend, a lady drove her car into a Jewish school, and she told the authorities she was offended by the Hebrew symbol above the school, and she thought she would attack it. There were adults in the school, no children, because it was the weekend. These type things are going to be happening in our country. We are being proactive today, and my only hope is we're proactive. Cost of putting this money in now will be soon enough to save people's lives. The Jewish people, the people that are in the black colleges and universities, and any other organization where we're going to have to fight the discrimination caused by insecurity and ignorance in our society.
Chair Fine, you recognize the close.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm one of those people who hasn't slept much in the last month. You can probably hear it in my voice. I spoke to many of you a couple of weeks ago. Usually I like to talk. Today is not one of those days. I just have a few points that I want to make. First, I want to thank the speaker who I've worked with on this bill. This bill originally started at $15 million. It's now $45. If every non-Jew cared as much as Paul Renner does, we wouldn't need to do this. For me, this is a sad day. I hate that we need to do it. I mean, think about all the things we could spend $45 million on that would be better than security guards and cameras and fences. I mean, no one's going to learn anything in school because of any of this. We're not helping our kids. We're keeping them safe, but we're not actually improving anybody's lives in terms of their futures by doing it. It's a sad day, and I particularly hate it for the kid who I have to apologize for. I hate being thanked for this stuff. I hate it. Because I haven't done a good enough job that we don't need this money. So I would just say this. I want you to understand what it's like for Jewish Floridians today. It's an extraordinary thing. It's hard to understand how most Jewish Floridians feel. But if you would ask many Jewish Floridians where they would feel safer today, in Florida or in a country where hundreds of rockets are being shot at them, most Jews would tell you they would be safer in Israel right now. Think about that as the world that we live in. So what we're doing here is we're going to help these kids a little bit more. We're going to help everybody who needs these things. And hopefully there will come a day not too long in the future where we don't need any more for any of this stuff. With that, I ask for your favorable support.
Thank you, Chair Fine. Ms. Sherrill, please call the roll on the bill.
Chair Leak, Vice Chair McClure.
Yes.
Committee Whip Mooney.
Yes.
Ranking Member Driscoll.
Yes.
Representatives Altman.
Yes.
Andrade.
Yes.
Bale.
Yes.
Benjamin.
Yes.
Brannon.
Yes.
Brasada Cabrera.
Yes.
Cheney.
Yes.
Daly.
Yes.
Fine. Yes. Garrison.
Yes.
Gottlieb.
Yes.
Grant.
Yes.
Gregory.
Yes.
Honchowski.
Yes.
Masullo.
Yes.
Payne.
Yes.
Perez.
Yes.
Rummel.
Yes.
Sosman.
Yes.
Shoaf?
Yes.
Silvers?
Yes.
Skidmore?
Yes.
Stevenson?
Yes.
Tomko?
Yes.
Williams? Antone?
Yes.
By your vote, show the bill passes unanimously. All right, members, we're going to move on to House Bill 3C, Family Empowerment Scholarship Program by Chair Tomko. Chair Tomko, do you mind explaining your bill?
Thank you, Chair McClure. Since the passage of HB 1 during the 2023 session, Florida has seen a record number of families benefiting from the expansion of the Florida Empowerment Scholarship Program for students with unique abilities, better known as the FESUA Scholarship. For FESUA program, statute establishes a cap or the maximum number of scholarships that can be funded in a school year. It is important to note that the statute also identifies five types of students who, while eligible to participate in the scholarship program, do not count against the statutory cap. For the 2023-2024 school year, the statutory cap is 40,913 FESUA scholarships. This is an increase of 14,413 scholarships over the cap for the 2022-2023 school year. As of the second quarterly payment, the Department of Education reports that just under 40,000 FESUA scholarships that count against the cap have already been funded for this school year. While the House is encouraged by the huge interest in the FESUA scholarship, we also realize that this high demand may result in some eligible students falling outside of the current statutory cap. HB 3C revises the statutory cap for the FESUA scholarship program for the 2023 to 2024 school year to be the number of students determined eligible by the scholarship funding organization and Department of Education pursuant to all the requirements of the FESUA scholarship program. And Chair McClure, that is the bill.
Thank you, Chair Tomko. Questions on the bill, members? Representative Anton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Two quick questions. First question, have any funds from the Enrollment Stabilization Program Fund been expended at this point in time?
You're recognized, Chair Tomko.
Thank you. At this point in time, it is undetermined. The $350 million is more than sufficient, though.
Follow up.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Tomko. And so just is there any likelihood that we will blow open the stabilization fund?
It is undetermined at this time. We have to wait until that December 15th closing date, but we are not foreseeing that we will be blowing up that whole $350 million.
Further questions, members? Wow. All right. Is there anyone in the audience wishing to speak? Mary Josephine Walsh, Florida Coalition for Private Schools, is a proponent wishing to speak. You're recognized.
Good afternoon. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and everyone for this late afternoon and the time that you're allowing me to speak. My name is Mary Josephine Walsh, and I am the founder of the Florida Coalition of Private Schools. I represent 87 members and over 7,000 students in the state of Florida. I also own a private not-for-profit school that specializes in special education since 2014. This was opened for my son, who is deaf, nonverbal, and severely autistic, and other children like him. We wholeheartedly support House Bill 1 and the legislature's efforts to expand FESUA for the special education students with unique abilities, and we thank you for this bill. I ask you to please understand that our current scholarship program is in crisis. Due to issues with disbursement of funds from Step Up for Students, who holds 95% of the scholarships, and the payment systems, schools are on the brink of closure, some of which have been in operations for greater than 10 years. In the case of my school, I have a small amount of students, only 48. 43 of them are FESUA. 100% of the funding that I relied upon in September was delayed. The last payment, as they were all received in small amounts, was not received until October 4th. In order to maintain payroll and operations, since last funding was received in April, I had to take out several high interest loans that are paid weekly. I've maxed out my personal credit cards. I have not paid my home or business mortgage in 2 months, and I have not taken a paycheck in 8 weeks. I do not want to close the doors on the families that I serve. This is not an isolated incident. I am one of many schools. I have a list of 11 schools that are also on the brink of closure, secondary to the mismanagement of funds that Step Up for Students has been in control of. I urge you to please take action to hold the organization accountable. We cannot wait until September of 24 for changes to be made. Many schools will close by then. In addition to the urgency to shed light on this gross mismanagement of funds, I have provided suggestions to help the program operate in the way that it was intended. We need for greater accountability and transparency, an oversight committee, set dates with deadlines for disbursements. There needs to be a revision on the criteria for the matrix, which assigns the value of the scholarship, one that is in alignment with evidence-based scientific standards of measurement of the severity of the disability, similar to those used by insurance companies. And we need to enforce interest and late fees for late payments, such as what were imposed on private schools for quarter one due to delayed funding. The hiccups cited by Step Up are not small. They are not family or private school errors in application. They are system and implementation error, which has had a devastating impact on providers who are caring for our most vulnerable, most severely disabled children. The very generation who should be caring for us in the years to come cannot even care for themselves. Without adequate support, we cannot abandon our children in the wake of this gross mismanagement. I close with my request for revisions to strengthen the bill with amendments which will sustain current programs and placement of our children. They simply cannot wait until September for changes. Thank you.
Thank you. Eli Hagler is a proponent wishing to appear. We'll mark them as waiving in support. I think this is just a misentry, but we'll read into the record. Eduardo Cornwarsel is a proponent wishing to appear but spoke on the last bill. Mary Josephine Walsh is a proponent wishing to appear. Yeah, we have you twice. Abraham Lubon is a proponent wishing to appear. You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Again, my name is Avram Luban from the Agudath Israel of Florida. As I told you previously, we're an organization that does advocacy for the Orthodox Jewish community. Recently, we started a new division, which is titled Yahalom, with the goal of helping and providing guidance and assisting families that have children with special needs. I want to share with you a conversation that our director recently had with a concerned father that called our office. He reached out to us because he had a son that was nonverbal and autistic. He was attending a public school, but it wasn't the ideal fit for his needs. The father wanted to enroll his son in a specialized private school with a program that was tailored for his son, perfect for children with similar challenges. He felt his child would excel in that setting. However, the tuition was too expensive, and he couldn't afford it. So he reached out to our director, and he asked her for advice and for guidance, for support. Then the father revealed that he had another concern. He said he had a 5-year-old son as well. And that son was just beginning to display similar symptoms to those that his older brother experienced. The father was beginning to become extremely concerned for the worse. Who's going to help these children? Who's going to help these families? We're talking about the most vulnerable individuals, our children, and amongst them, the most vulnerable are those facing these unfortunate disabilities. It is our moral imperative to do anything that we can, everything within our means, to assist these families and ensure that every child has access to the resources and opportunities that they need to shine. For many families, the Family Empowerment Scholarship Program is a lifeline. It makes the crucial difference in enabling children to have their specific needs addressed. But of course, needless to say, that's only if you're on the program, not if you're waitlisted. Expanding the eligibility criteria for students who can receive the scholarship by removing the cap would be immensely helpful and meaningful to so many families. On behalf of Agudath Israel of Florida, we wholeheartedly endorse and support this measure. Thank you.
Thank you. Adam Ekblad, Millennium Academy, is a proponent wishing to speak. You're recognized.
Dear Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, my name is Adam Ekblad and I represent Millennium Academy, where we specialize in educating students who fall through the cracks of the public school system. I would like to start by saying thank you for those who continue to support scholarship funding for those students of our state. We wholeheartedly support House Bill 3C, which promotes to expand educational opportunities for students in need of tailored learning environments. The bill's enhancement of the program aligns with making educational choice a reality for many families, especially those of law enforcement, military personnel, and foster or adoptive parents. Your support for this bill will not only just open doors for individual students, but will also strengthen the fabric of educational inclusivity in our state. Thank you for considering this pivotal step towards educational equality in the state of Florida.
Thank you. Nancy Lothar, Dr. Nancy Lothar, Florida PTA, is waiving in opposition. Damaris Allen, opponent waiving in opposition. Sarah Massey, Florida Chamber of Commerce, is waiving in support. Nathan Hoffman, Foundation for Florida's Future, is waiving in support. Abraham Lubon, is an opponent wishing to speak? That doesn't add up with what you just said. Thank you. All right, members, we can strike that last one. That was a duplicate and clearly incorrect. Members, we're in debate on this. Any debate? Representative Skidmore.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I appreciate the bill being brought forward for all of these students who are waiting. And I am prepared to support the bill for sure. But I'm really concerned about the testimony that we heard today about the failures of Step Up for Students and the failure to get the funding that we've appropriated to these students, to them, so that we are risking their educational future by not funding them. I really think that we need to be doing something in regard to Step Up for Students and any other organization that is providing these funds to families if they're not qualified to do so. So it's a good thing that we're doing this. These are students who should have been at the top of the list, by the way, getting the funding, not the millionaires' kids. But in any case, it's a different set of funding. I really think that if we're not doing anything during special session, by the time we get to our regular session, there better be some guardrails around Step Up for Students for these programs, or we're going to see a lot of students failing and a lot of businesses failing in the state of Florida.
Members, further debate on the subject of the bill? Chair Tomko, you're recognized to close.
Thank you so much, Mr. Chair, and thank you for all those members that came up and spoke in testimony. I do want to remind the members of this committee that this bill specifically deals with the revisement of the cap for the 23 through 24 year. It is a great thing that we are entering session, so policy changes can be made. However, this is to make sure that those students that are on the current waiting list will not be overlooked, and that we are doing our part as a state, and so I would ask for your favorable support.
Having closed on the bill, Ms. Sherrill, will you please call the roll?
Chair Leake, Vice Chair McClure?
Yes.
Committee Whip Mooney?
Yes.
Ranking Member Driscoll?
Yes.
Representatives Altman?
Yes.
Andrade?
Yes.
Bell?
Yes.
Benjamin?
Yes.
Brannon?
Yes.
Brisada Guerrera?
Yes.
Cheney?
Yes.
Daly?
Yes.
Fine? Garrison?
Yes.
Gottlieb?
Yes.
Grant?
Yes.
Gregory?
Yes.
Honchowski?
Yes.
Masullo?
Yes.
Payne?
Yes.
Perez? Rommel? Sosman?
Yes.
Schoaf?
Yes.
Silvers?
Yes.
Skidmore?
Yes.
Stevenson?
Yes.
Tomko?
Yes.
Williams? Antone?
Yes.
By your vote, show the bill passes. Members, this concludes our agenda for today. Is there any further business before the committee? Seeing none, Representative Benjamin and his cell phone moves we rise. Without objection, the meeting is adjourned.